I'm Christopher Baudette with the Steyr Group. In the Gospel, Jesus fed 5,000 with only 5 loaves and 2 fish. After the crowd was satisfied, there were 12 wicker baskets left over. It seems that whenever you and I set to work and do our part, God provides the abundance. In each episode of this podcast, I'll explore with pastoral leaders and development professionals from across the United States and Canada all the many ways God meets the spiritual and temporal needs of our parish communities, our Catholic schools, and the diocesan church. And not only meets those needs, but provides in abundance. You're listening to 12 Wicker Baskets. Hey, welcome. Thanks very much for joining me today. In addition to conversations with development professionals and pastoral leaders, we also want to explore in this podcast the perspective of others with whom development professionals work and for whom pastoral leaders provide care and ministry. There are so many ways each disciple of Jesus experiences the abundance of God in his or her life, many ways in which we encounter how God supplies and exceeds our needs. It is in witness to that experience that we engage our guests here on 12 Wicker Baskets, and today's guest and conversation are no exception. I have the pleasure today of speaking with David Nicolini, a disciple of Jesus, a husband and father, and an entrepreneur who has launched several successful companies, to discuss faithful entrepreneurship co-creating with God. David is a faith-driven global security and investigations expert and 4-time entrepreneur who believes in relationships over transactions and abundancy over scarcity. Themes we'll explore today. A graduate of Duke University with 25 years of professional experience, his journey is marked by resilience, innovation, and constant learning. His work has spanned 6 continents, and his expertise is sought after by multinational corporations, high net worth family offices, and senior executives from businesses, NGOs, and the U.S. government. Through his current venture, Evidencity, he has become a passionate advocate, speaker, and sponsor for efforts to combat modern slavery and human trafficking around the globe. Beyond his success as an entrepreneur, David is a man committed to God, his family, and the church, and his community. As such, he finds himself at the unique intersection of entrepreneurship, industry expertise, and philanthropic activities. David, it's great to have you with us on 12 Wicker Baskets. Welcome, and thanks for taking time to visit today.
Thank you, Christopher. It's great to be with you.
As we start our conversation today, I'm wondering if you might describe, maybe with a little more detail, your own journey of both entrepreneurship and faith. You've had a lot of experience of originating ventures that have taken on great success and have grown. And I think that's maybe a unique career path that our listeners would be interested in. But also, too, that whole career advancement is also, of course, a journey of faith. And so can you talk about those ventures you've begun and what you've learned along the way and maybe how you've incorporated your faith into your work?
I would start by saying that one of my favorite expressions is that if you want to hear the Lord laugh, tell him your plans. Mm-hmm. And I definitely, my life has kind of followed that same pattern, which is to say that 20 years ago, if you had asked me, I never would have thought of myself as an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. And now sitting here 20 years later, I've had that opportunity to start 4 different ventures and have a moderate amount of success in doing so. But it was never my intention and it was never my plan. Fell somewhat backwards post 9/11 into the private security space and risk management space, or risk mitigation space, I should say. And having been in that space for a little less than a decade, got a tap on the shoulder from a former client who said, you know, I've left my job. I'm looking to raise capital. I have some other partners, and we think you'd be a good addition to the co-founding team. And you know, what do you think? And so kind of went down that path of well, the first thing I have to, biggest sale of my life was convincing my wife that this was actually a good idea. She was very much interested in a job and benefits and stability.
Yeah. Imagine.
And this opportunity was none of those things, but we made that decision together with discernment and prayer and decided that it was the right path for us. And I started walking down that entrepreneurial path back in 2010.
And it strikes me, David, that you really took a great risk to get into a risk mitigation business.
Yes. The irony.
Yeah.
It was a risk, but I walked it. But I would say that in parallel, there was a faith walk happening,
right?
As well. I have been blessed from a very early age, as far back as I can remember, that faith has always been a gift from God. Mm-hmm. Faith was always there, but that faith was separate. So back in 2010, I would say that I was walking I was taking this gift of faith and I was starting to unpack it and try to discern what it meant for my life. But that was one journey. Mm-hmm. And then this entrepreneurship path was another journey. And mm-hmm. they were in parallel, but were not really touching. There was a certain separation of church and work, if mm-hmm. you will.
And yet you said you prayed with your wife and you discerned and sought guidance from God about this career decision too.
Absolutely. But faith was something at that time that was very personal. It was very private.
Okay.
It was to be kept in the home, mm-hmm. not in the workplace.
Got it.
Which, you know, now as I look back on my younger self and my younger thinking, I see that as kind of like the lie of the evil one. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what he wants. He mm-hmm. wants us to keep our faith and our religion and our Christianity. He wants us to keep it under wraps, which is interesting because our Lord said, don't put your light under a bushel basket.
Right,
so
exactly.
So the scripture was always there. I just wasn't necessarily understanding it. Mm-hmm, so these two paths were separate. That first company that I started in 2010 was doing very well. It continues to do well to this day. And I continue to be a shareholder in it. By about 2015, 2016, 2017, we made the Inc. 5000. We're having great success. But for me personally, professionally, it was not enough. I had kind of hit a certain ceiling. We had created everything we needed to, not everything we needed to, but we had created a lot. We had innovated a lot. We had built the company up. And now the plan was just growth. It was just scale. It was just do more of the same. Mm-hmm. That frustrated me professionally. It frustrated me personally. When I went to my partners about it and talked about maybe creating more intellectual property or leaning into technology or doing things in the security space differently than we were doing it or it had been done in the past, that was met with a lot of resistance. Mm. Ultimately, what led me to take a step away from that company, it in the Lord's plan, it took about 5 or 6 years, but the first step away from it was not a faith step away from it. It was a business model, there were professional reasons and a business model reason as to why I thought that there might be more. And then of course, in the Lord's way, what then wound up happening was he brought those two paths together in an absolute nexus. So where I was walking the separate path of faith on one hand and entrepreneurship on the other hand, and it was my entrepreneurship path that said, you know what, I need more, I want more. And what I thought I needed and wanted more had to do with business and innovation and the like. It led me to my current business partner, who was someone that I known from the industry. We'd known each other for a long time. We respected each other. We often got together over coffee or breaking bread, but purely knew each other on a professional level,
right?
And a professional level only. In 2018, I told him this crazy idea that I thought we should go into business together. And that led us down a path that ultimately I found myself in his living room at his home. in front of the fireplace, where all of a sudden, over a cup of coffee, he tells me, you know, you told me several months ago that you wanted to go into business with me. And we've been kind of walking that path together, trying to figure out if it's the right thing for you, the right thing for me. He's like, it's come to a point now where I need to tell you that I don't own my business. God does. And I think it was the first time he and I ever spoke of God.
About faith. Wow.
And about faith or God. About 4 hours later, as the fire was dying down and the coffee had gotten very cold, we both decided, after he had shared his testimony and I shared mine, that we should continue walking down that path.
Had you known that he was a man of faith, and you just hadn't talked about it, or was that really his kind of witnessing to you and being forthright about his priorities, which then turns out resonated to some degree with you too?
We had never spoke of religion or God before, before that moment. Mm-hmm. Even after, you know, 3 months after I had said, let's go into business together, he had me do several interviews with mentors and people he trusted. We were talking, kind of putting together a memorandum of understanding, mm-hmm. of what that partnership might look like. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it wasn't until that moment when he gave his testimony that God came into it. Mm-hmm. And from my perspective, although I didn't realize it that day in front of his fire, but again, that was in 2018. We're now in 2023. I can look back and see the way in which the Lord had me walking those two paths, where I was walking them separately, and he just crashed them together in an absolutely beautiful way that has been a blessing in my life. That is just, it's hard for me to quantify in words.
Right. Blessing it's been. Right. As I mentioned earlier, somewhat flippantly, but, you know, you were taking a risk to be an entrepreneur is by definition to take a risk, right? You're stepping into the breach. You're trying to address needs or concerns, or maybe even generate them and then create the product or what have you, the service to meet them. But I'm also struck in scripture and in the walk of discipleship that in some ways, when the Lord invites people to become his disciples, it's the riskiest proposal at face value, because at the heart of that invitation is, you know, you have to, he who does not deny himself and take up his cross is not worthy of being my disciple. And that, to respond to that invitation, requires a significant degree of trust. And yet then, when discovering the Lord and his goodness and that his yoke is easy and his burden is light, it's actually the surest bet out there. And I think of Moses, you know, or Abraham being invited to up and go. Well, where, Lord? I'll tell you later. Just start moving. I think we can, or all, how many prophets in the Old Testament had a similar encounter of a call from God into the unknown, but yet all that's needed is the act of trust in the now. And it sounds like as an entrepreneur, there are some parallels there. And then you've had this beautiful experience of how the two have really fit together. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely. My partner and I, over the last several years, often talk about, we walk by faith. We don't walk by sight.
Right, right.
And when, you know, when the flesh and the physical world, when you do try to see, you often find out that even when you try to lean on your sight, you can't see. Mm-hmm. And it's just one faithful step after another, where all mm-hmm. you can see is the step that's right in front of you. Mm-hmm. And so our faith is Christianity, Catholicism. You know, we talk about the mysteries of our faith. We could also talk about them sometimes as like the paradoxes, right? This world sees them as paradoxes, incongruent, right. that doesn't make sense. I can't put it in a beaker and stir it around,
right, right.
And get the same result over and over again. But that is the mysticism and the beauty and the incredible nature of our faith, in that the Lord wants us to be completely dependent mm-hmm. upon him mm-hmm. and his goodness and his promise and his love. And that is when he pours out his blessings mm-hmm. on us.
I had a spiritual director say to me once that God will never answer any prayer that would render him obsolete. You can pray that prayer all you want, but if it removes your sense of need and contingency as a creature upon the Creator, that would be a disservice for God to grant that prayer.
We like to, in our flesh, we like to pretend that we are in control. Mm-hmm. We are masters of our own destiny.
If you were to say to venture capitalists, well, our business plan is we walk by faith, not by sight, I don't think that would go over very well. Somehow there's this balance to walk. And I think maybe that's why it's so difficult for people, entrepreneur or not, to find this integration between my sense of self and purpose and relationality and the like. And I want to talk about some of these themes in a moment, but, and then the way I make money, the way I produce something, the service I'm rendering as a means, you know, to keep body and soul together. It's, and again, no matter how successful I might be at that, the invitation is there for all of us. And it seems like it's difficult. It's difficult to be open to how God might bring about that integration and how we cooperate with that. I notice that, you know, as you give talks and you share your journey with others, you tend to emphasize relationship over transaction. And I know in our work at the Steyer Group as well, we always tell our clients, you know, if we're going to conduct these fundraisers together to build a new school or beautify your church or whatever it might be, at the end of it, we don't want this to be a, you know, client vendor relationship. We want high fives, not handshakes. We want to have a relationship. How do you think the business person, the entrepreneur's understanding of business as being a function primarily of relationship, maybe I can say over transaction, but primarily one of relationship, how does that help you understand entrepreneurship as more than just, you know, the know-how, the knack of new profitable ways to address needs, and from the perspective of faith as a calling?
Think a lot about the early church. I pray and I meditate a lot about the upper room. And I think of the fact that, you know, if you and I decided that we wanted to take over the world, I don't think we would come up with the plan that the Lord did. Where in the upper room you had maybe 60 of the apostles and the early Christians that were devastated, scared, frightened. Most people had run away. I don't think that's the way we would start our plan, our master plan to take over the world.
Doesn't exactly look promising, and, right?
Yeah, doesn't look promising. As a venture capitalist, you might not want to invest in that.
Right.
And yet that early church, even with the prosecutions, the persecutions and the martyrdoms and the issues that they dealt with, there was something about them that no one could squelch, that this world could not destroy or kill. Mm-hmm. And it was the way in which they were in community. It's the way in which they treated one another. There was teaching. Absolutely, there was teaching, especially by the apostles. But the communities of Christians, they lived their life a different way. And it was so radical and so revolutionary and so beautiful and relationship and divine that other people said, even though these were the people that were ostracized or persecuted or actually, you know, made into martyrs and thrown to the lions, people said, I want that. Mm-hmm. I want what they have. Because mm-hmm. even with all of that risk, right, even with all of that downside, what they have is truth, capital T truth, and I want it. So when I think of the investors that I've had over the years, or I think of the partners that I've had over the years, I think of my clients, my employees, my businesses, I try to emphasize relationship and community always first. Mm-hmm. And the Lord will do with it what he wants. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, you know, my partner and I now, unfortunately, over the last few years, as we've kind of had some ups and downs of early startup chaos, we've had to let some people go. When we walk into those meetings, we talk about how are we going to love on this person, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. right? We are delivering something that we are delivering a message that we don't want to deliver and that this person does not want to receive, but it needs to be done.
Right.
It's the right thing to do. How do we bring the Lord into that moment to his glory and to everyone in the room's like understanding that, and again, sharing stories in moments like that, where I look back now, 25 years ago, being fired and being devastated in that moment. But now looking back and seeing that it was one of the best things that it could have ever happened to
me. Yep.
It's hard to see it in the moment.
Yeah,
and right. 25 years ago, I certainly didn't see that, but I can now see in retrospect, and can I somehow share that in this moment with this person and realize that this might be exactly what you need? Because this was, for one reason or another, this wasn't working out. This isn't where you were supposed to be.
Right.
It's a delicate balance, but again, it's all about relationship and the way in which you live your life and run your business to hopefully attract others to say, I want that. I want to be part of that.
So, you know, I'm thinking of this whole concept of not concept, but reality of relationality as being a part of who we are as human beings. You know, the rich theological tradition of that man is created imago Dei, in the image of God, in the image and likeness of God. Which means, of course, then that the human person is, by our very, the way we're threaded together, relational, because the God in whose image we're created is a trinity of persons. So it means we're made for truth. We're made for beauty and justice and goodness. And you talked about how emphasizing or maintaining a proper focus on relationship can help grace one's business endeavors or work as it does really anything else. What I want to ask is, in that nugget of novelty that the entrepreneur wants to pursue, is there a way for that entrepreneur to think about relationship of how this new venture, how this new business will also further or support or build relationship?
I think it's a great question. And I think that sometimes we get back to faith. We get back to not being able to see. And I'll give you an example. We're fortunate in my current company now, my current venture now, the startup. We are fortunate in that the majority of our cap table are also believers. And when we went about raising capital from these different groups, many of them not only wanted to do their due diligence on our business model and, you know, what's going to be the return on investment and what's the plan and who are the people and all the kind of traditional that you would get from any sophisticated investor. They also wanted to know what our impact was going to be, which is a growing trend in financial institutions and in institutional investment. But this is actually kingdom impact. These are believers that are looking for impact that is specifically kingdom impact. And what I will tell you is, I want to,
before we move on from that, how would you define or describe kingdom impact?
It goes to exactly to the question that I think you were pointing to, which is about relationship. Mm-hmm. And so this idea that we are built, we are made, we are designed for community and relationship. And that's exactly the kind of kingdom impact that these investors are looking for, which is to say, one of my investors talks about the fact that when we're sitting here talking to each other on this podcast, we need to breathe. If we were to get up and run a marathon, we would need to breathe more, right? Mm-hmm. We would need more oxygen. And so he looks at capitalism and return on investment like oxygen. In and of itself, there's nothing wrong with it. There's nothing wrong with profit. There's nothing wrong with more profit. However, you know, you cannot serve God and mammon at the same time. If your impact is all about profit, if your purpose and business model is all about profit, then you're not serving the Lord, you're serving mammon. The impact we're talking about goes back to what are the two most important commandments. Whatever it is that you're doing, whatever widget you're making, whatever you're bringing to the marketplace, is it improving relationships? Is it improving community? Is it bringing people together, or is it separating them? Or are you not even thinking about that because all you're thinking about is mammon? And I need more. I need more. I need more.
Yeah, more for more sake and for the self. Right.
Yeah.
Well, I want to explore. We're going to take a little break here, but when we come back, I want to speak with you maybe more directly about the theme for our conversation, faithful entrepreneurship, co-creating with God. Do not go anywhere. I'm speaking with my guest, David Nicolini, to talk about faithful entrepreneurship, co-creating with God. We'll be right back.
When Jim Steyer founded the Steyer Group in 1997, his goal was simple: help Catholic churches, schools, and dioceses reach their fundraising and development goals. And to do it, hire the best people in the industry. Our motto is inspiring support, and it's central to what we do. We've become one of the most highly recommended Catholic fundraising firms in the country. We've conducted nearly 1,800 campaigns, raising more than $2.5 billion for our clients. We inspire generosity by communicating your mission. Are you faced with significant capital needs that are only growing more urgent? Are you struggling under a debt service that weighs down your ability to fulfill your mission? Taking on a capital campaign is a serious commitment, but partnering with the Steyer Group will give you what you need for success. Contact us today to learn more about how the Steyer Group can inspire support in your community. Call us toll-free at 866-391-3244 or visit online at steyergroup.com. The Steyer Group, inspiring support.
Thanks for staying with us. I am speaking with my guest, David Nicolini, about co-creating with God, faithful entrepreneurship. And David, I wanted to move specifically to understanding entrepreneurship as a creative act, because there too, we talk about the image and likeness of God. God invites us to create beauty, to create truth, goodness by our actions, by our product, our stewardship of creation. I was thinking we might even call God the original entrepreneur. Of course, he started with nothing, ex nihilo. That's not true for us. But insofar as we are created in the image and likeness of a creating God, do you think it's fair to say that to one degree or another, each of us is an entrepreneur, or is that a stretch?
I think that each of us is called to a purpose. Mm-hmm. Each of us is called to labor. And so I think we're all called to that. We're all called to some special purpose that the Lord has for us, that he has had for us before we were even born. Mm-hmm. And so I think that everyone is called to that.
So how do you perceive the work of the entrepreneur as being co-creative? If someone is gifted with an entrepreneurial spirit or vision, for that person to exercise that, to find one's groove and to flourish, is truly a manifestation of God's charisms given to that person.
Athletes call it being in the zone, and they talk about where the mind kind of shuts down and the muscle memory and the instinct take over. But there's this great clip that used to be on all the highlight reels of Michael Jordan actually after hitting a three-pointer, and I can't remember what number three-pointer after another, and he actually looked over to the broadcast table where Magic Johnson was, and he just kind of like shrugged his shoulders and looked like I don't know what's happening, like I can't miss. And that is what I think what an athlete might call being in the zone, I believe, is that individual fulfilling God's purpose.
It seems to me that when God gives us charisms and invites us to be in the zone, to cultivate them and train and hone skills and gifts, and then to apply what we have to relationship, to mission, to witnessing, etc., there can be an experience at times I don't have enough. I don't have what it takes to fulfill this inspiration within me. You know, it's both an invitation and yet a keen experience of want. I'm thinking again of Old Testament. Every time God calls a prophet to leave what is comfortable and what is known, God doesn't supply a new comfort just yet to make that easier. You know, wow, am I going to be able to do this? The upper room, perfect example. We're supposed to proclaim a crucified God, starting with Jerusalem, to all the corners of the world. I don't even want to leave the corners of this room. What do I have to fulfill this? We call that scarcity. And the title of this podcast, when the apostles were told by Jesus to feed the thousands with 5 loaves and 2 fish, I can imagine they were really perplexed. And a lot of our Catholic communities that the Steyr Group serves, dioceses, parishes, schools, they too often face a scarcity of resources, and they can risk an insecurity about their ability to fulfill that mission. I could imagine an entrepreneur would face some similar questions. You need venture capitalists. Why? Because you have a scarcity of resources, and it's not going to fly unless we address this. How does one, in your experience, because I think this can translate over to discipleship as well, but especially from what you've learned as an entrepreneur, how do you overcome a scarcity mentality, this hand-wringing, sort of fretting, almost defeatist perspective to a mentality of abundance?
So I think the first thing is that, you know, every time in the Bible, I think almost every time in the Bible that someone came into an encounter with an angel or the Lord, mm-hmm. what's the first thing they always say?
Be not afraid.
Do not be afraid.
Right.
Be not afraid.
Right.
Right. Like, don't be afraid. So I think this gets back to what we were talking about earlier, acknowledging and admitting that we are completely dependent upon the Lord, mm-hmm. and that he is a Lord of fulfilled promises. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And he has told us, be not afraid. Mm-hmm. Easier said than done.
Yep, for sure.
As you are, you know, looking at what we call in entrepreneurship burn rates, when you're burning through capital, when you're a small business and you're worried about making payroll, right, in a couple of weeks, easier said than done. But I think it begins with remembering God's promise, which is be not afraid. Mm-hmm. The next step, at least for my partner and myself, the next step is actually we go to Exodus and Moses. And when Moses is in front of the burning bush, if you look, he keeps on saying, what if? What if? What if?
Yeah, what if they ask me?
What if?
Right.
Right. What if they, you know, what if Pharaoh won't listen to me? What if the people won't listen to me? You know that I'm not good with words. Why, you know, it's over and over again, it's this phrase of what if, what if, what if, and the what if is driven by fear. Mm-hmm. And the Lord turns the phrase around on Moses and says, what is?
Yes.
What is right. it? What is mm-hmm. in your hand? Mm-hmm. And he says a staff, right? And you what? And so we try to stay from a place of faithfulness and push out fear. And then we try to be realistic about what is true. Mm-hmm. That's a good start. Mm-hmm. That's a good kind of two-part start, so that when you are fearful, when you are worried about risk, where you're not exactly sure what's going on, it's a good 1-2 punch mm-hmm. to start transitioning from scarcity to abundance. Mm-hmm. And again, all throughout, I mean, you know, we are worth more than 2 sparrows, right? The Lord provides for the flowers, he provides for the birds, and he, don't you think he loves you more? And so whatever scripture you want to point to, the Lord wants us to be dependent on him and know that he will make good on his promises.
Well, listen, thank you for all of the ways that you've responded to the promptings of God in your life and in fits and starts like the rest of us, but kept moving forward in prayer and discernment and being able to create these new ventures, and ultimately for all of the connections that you've helped make to build relationship and to encourage others to go forward and serve in trust and not in fear. So blessings to you, to your family, and upon your future work. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Christopher. I appreciate that. I don't know that I deserve it, but I appreciate your kind words. Thank you.
You bet. I hope you enjoyed our conversation today with David Nicolini to help us appreciate that our gifts are our own, and no one is exempt from the divine command to set them in service to God and neighbor. You may or may not be an entrepreneur, but David's reflections help us all realize the opportunity to be co-creative with God by trusting his call, setting out on mission, and moving from scarcity to abundance when inspired and prompted by the Holy Spirit. Please subscribe to the podcast to ensure you'll hear each month's episode and share the podcast with colleagues and friends so they too can be edified in their walk of faith and inspired in the work of building up the church. That's it for this episode. We'll be back again next month with another great conversation with Bishop Andrew Cousins of the Diocese of Crookston, right here on 12 Wicker Baskets.